You're listening to The Big Picture. The Big Picture. Here is Olivier Knox.
And we're back with more of The Big Picture. I'm Olivier Knox, Chief DC Correspondent for SiriusXM. Just means I cover the White House, Congress, State Department, Defense Department, strange little corners of the federal bureaucracy. Covered four White Houses, you know, all the fun stuff. You can find me on Twitter at OKNOX. My next guest is Kamyar Mohadas, Senior Lecturer and Fellow in Economics at Grattan College, University of Cambridge. Kamyar, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me, Olivier.
So you have, there's a study now of the long-term macroeconomic effects of climate change. This is a multi-country analysis. What did you set out to study?
So basically what we try to understand is what are the macroeconomic effects, income effects of climate change across the globe? And in particular, whether there are any long-term economic effects of climate change, or are they simply short-term effects that we can that happen 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and then we don't observe any negative effects of climate change? And we also wanted to understand whether this is an issue for advanced economies such as the United States. We wanted to know whether the U.S. economy is resilient to climate change. And finally, we wanted to see if there are negative effects of climate change in the long run. Through which channels, through which sectors, where are these economic effects shown up? Is it just the agricultural sector, or are other sectors also hit? So we really want to understand the macroeconomic consequences of climate change from a long-term point of view, and under different scenarios. So under the business as usual scenario, or without what we can call without mitigation policies, and or what would happen under a scenario where we were committed to the Paris Agreement.
Well, you've anticipated my follow-up question, which was, what assumptions about climate change did you make for the study? There are, as you know, there's a pretty big disparity between some scenarios and others in terms of, are we going to see, well, how much of a temperature increase do you see, and what are the other impacts? What assumptions did you build in to what climate change will even look like?
So the first thing we actually do is we gather data over the last half century, so over the last five decades, and look at the relationship between changes in climate variables. So this is both temperature and precipitation. And what we're doing is we're not only looking at the average of the climate variables, but we're also looking at their variability. So variability is very important. So in our study, we use this historical data. We estimate the effects of climate variables on economic growth. And what we find in the first stage is that actually the negative effects of climate change, deviations of temperature and precipitation from a historical norm, from a place which we've got, we adapted to, which we are used to, whether actually climate is becoming cooler or hotter, or whether we have more rain or less rain, this actually hits economic activity, and this hits economic activity for all countries. This is a universal thing. It doesn't matter whether you're a rich country, poor country, or you're a cold country or a hot country. In the second stage, we use these estimates and we try to understand what would happen in the global economy at the country level if climate was changing according to the scenarios you mentioned. So one of the scenarios we look at is without mitigation policies, or what's called RCP 8.5. And there we see a sharp increase in global temperatures. And with those sharp increases and with the increase in variability, we see that there is a huge hit on the global economy. So around 7% of global economy will be wiped out. And that's, to put it into perspective, think of economies such as Australia, Belgium, Canada, Germany, South Africa. That's about 7% of the global economy. That will be wiped out. But where we are able to commit to the Paris Agreement, so in other words, we contain the increase in temperatures to less than 2 degrees, then what we observe is that these losses are substantially reduced. So global losses are just under 1%. And to put it into perspective in terms of the U.S., which is an advanced economy, the U.S. will get hit by about 10%. U.S. household income will get hit about 10% if we stay on the business as usual course. Were we to commit to the Paris Agreement, the losses would be reduced to less than 2% of income. So there is huge benefits from committing to the Paris Agreement.
Talking to Kamira Mohadis, senior lecturer and fellow in economics at Grattan College, University of Cambridge. I'll tell you what, 10% reduction in household income sounds much less dire than I expected you to say. Because, you know, I'm looking at projections that say, oh, you know, if we get this kind of sea level rise, Miami's basically underwater because of sea level rise. You know, flooding in the Midwest gets a lot worse. Storms get worse. We see a spread of diseases that used to be confined to the tropics. Now they're everywhere. So I don't mean to be, you know, I don't mean to be either optimistic or pessimistic here. But I'm surprised actually. I thought you would find on the do nothing scale. I thought you would find much more calamitous effects.
Yeah, so normal comment we get. There are two things I want to say. One is that what we show is that it doesn't matter what type of economy you are, you get hit. Right now, the studies that usually argue that it's only the poor and the developing countries and the hot countries that will be affected by climate change. And in some cases, even advanced economies such as Canada, Sweden, and particularly some of the emerging economies like Russia will double or quadruple their income just because of a climate change. So what we are showing is actually everybody will get hit. The second thing you're mentioning is, oh, but even then it sounds quite small. But remember what we are saying. These are very conservative estimates because here we are just looking at with climate change, as you correctly said, the severe and extreme weather events will become more frequent and become more severe. And these will have a toll on economic activity. And so what we are saying is that this 10% of the U.S. GDP is actually a very conservative estimate. Where this variability is to increase substantially, the hit on the U.S. economy could be even more. So take this as a lower bound, essentially, not as the highest losses that we obtain from climate change scenarios.
Got it. Okay, that's helpful. There's another factor here, and I'm going to call it the we're all drinking English wine factor, which is the, you know, I've seen a bunch of different climate change estimates over the last 20 years. And at one point in the Bush administration, you know, they did sketch out a really dire of potential effects from climate change. But there was a small section saying that, well, but for some countries and some localities, the change in climate could have beneficial events. Or effect rather, and so that thus the joke about drinking English wine because, you know, suddenly it's warmer and nicer there. What did you find in terms of potential gains for some countries?
So actually, we don't find any gains for any of the countries. We look at 174 countries and climate change. The long term macroeconomic impact on climate change, on economic activity due to climate change, is actually negative across all countries. So some studies say, yeah, well, Canada is going to be much better off, you know, because it's going to warm up, and warming up might be good for agriculture. I mean, the thing is, when Canada is warming up, it's going to warm up a lot faster than say some of the hotter economies. And we underestimate the risk this has to the physical infrastructure of Canada, to coastal and northern communities, to the health and well-being and the ecosystem and all sorts of things. So this actually comes with a huge cost. Let me give you an example. So I'm from Sweden. In Sweden, if we see a little bit of snow, we don't get that scared, right? But if you're in Spain and suddenly you have these extreme weather events, which implies that sometimes you do have snow, everything comes to a halt. So from airport, people having access to going on the roads to go to work and so on. So actually, the issue is not that the level of temperature goes up, which I think a lot of people talk about. What we are arguing is what we need to look at is not the level of temperature, but also the variability in temperature. So it could be that sometimes, on the East Coast, it's been very cold. We have had some very cold winters. And that has disrupted economic activity from construction to mining to retail sector. You know, people have to heat up their homes and purchasing power falls and retail sector takes a hit. Or here in LA where it's been a drought and people have to cool down their homes. And, you know, again, it gets hit on purchasing power and retail takes. So I don't buy that warming of certain countries will actually be beneficial to them. In the UK, we experienced a very, very, in fact, in Cambridge in UK was the hottest temperatures recorded a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, trains stopped working. People's productivity fell. I mean, it was not good news for the UK economy. So I think we need to get away from looking at the level of temperature, but also looking at the variability. And it really hits all sectors. This is not just a story about agriculture. This goes from manufacturing to services, retail, wholesale trade, and so on. And we show that in our paper, zooming into the U.S. economy, that the U.S. economy gets pretty much all of the sectors will get hit by climate variability.
You know, you talked about the few snowflakes in Spain. That is the case in Washington, D.C., which, Lord knows, has a winter. And yet, yes. and I've lived here for more than 20 years, and yet every single time you get, you know, the notion of snow, the supermarket shelves are empty, and the already terrible suburban drivers get actually wretched. So I have you for maybe about another minute. It's tempting to think of this in terms of like, well, of course, climate's going to affect agriculture, and of course, climate's going to affect the coasts because of rising sea level. What are some of the other effects that you looked at?
So we look at the effect on labor productivity across all sorts of sectors and employment, and we basically show that it's going to hit construction. You know, whether we have more rain or snowfall or whether it's dry, et cetera, it's going to affect services, retail, construction, manufacturing, mining. If it's too much rain, you can't access the mountainous mining region. So basically, we see it affecting all sorts of sectors. This is not just the story about agriculture, as I said. Climate change will hit all sectors, and it will hit it for us in advanced economies. And we really need to take mitigation policies much, much more seriously.
All right. Kamir Mahada, senior lecturer and fellow in economics at Grattan College, University of Cambridge, on Twitter. I'm going to spell it out, KamirMohaddes. Kamir, this is your last chance for 20 seconds of commentary on this.
I really hope that our study will shed some light for policymakers and that the policymakers will see the benefit of fighting climate change. This is not just an issue for hot economies, poor economies, but also advanced economies could benefit substantially from committing to the Paris Agreement.
All right, Kamir Mohaddes, thank you so very much. I really appreciate your time and expertise.
Thanks very much, Olivia. Cheers.